the ANZ Bank, what happened was a remarkable turnaround over 7 years that went from the worst performing bank in the country to the number one bank globally on the Dow Jones Sustainability Index. When I walked in, managers or the executives were at a loss because they had tried so many things to bring about a change, including a massive restructure, but nothing worked. So we went about diagnosing what was going on. And what we discovered was what I call the order taker pattern.
Hey guys, welcome to the Brain and Brand Show. I'm your host, Timothy Maurice. Thanks for choosing this episode. Today, I have the privilege of sharing a conversation with Siobhan McHale, the author of The Hive Mind at Work, Harnessing the Power of Group Intelligence to Create Meaningful and Lasting Change. If you're responsible for leading teams, this is the episode for you. Siobhan's work focuses on a form of intelligence called group intelligence, or what she terms GQ. Just think IQ, EQ. This is GQ. I was inspired to research her work after reading how she fuses beehive psychology to understand the fundamental laws of nature to accomplish leadership goals. In this conversation, we explore practical ways you can get your team buzzing to deliver the bottom line. And it's an episode you're going to want to share. You can get her book on Amazon or any good bookstore. Meet Siobhan McHale. Enjoy. Siobhan, welcome to the Brain and Brand Show.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Where are you at the moment?
I'm in Melbourne, Australia, and it's 4:30 in the afternoon.
Lovely. And did you grow up there? Did you find yourself there based on your career path?
Yeah, I actually grew up in Ireland in a village called Fanay, and I spent my childhood there. And then I moved to England to study for my master's degree in organizational psychology at Sheffield University. Went to work in London at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and then got a transfer with PricewaterhouseCoopers to Australia in 1994. So I've been living in Australia ever since.
Lovely. And I think you've worked on four continents.
Yes, in my decade as a consultant, I jetted in and out of organizations across four continents, which was absolutely fascinating and really enjoyed that decade.
And in that decade, did you have a favorite
continent?
Yes.
Oh dear. Listen, I love them all. I do love South America, and I managed while I was traveling in Brazil to learn Portuguese, which is,
lovely.
Yeah, which is one of the great ways to expand your brain, as you would know. It's just an incredible way to, just get those neural connections firing in different ways. So, yeah, I'm proud to say I learned Portuguese.
Well, I'm going to put you on the spot quickly before we dive in. What would be the title of your book? Give me a rough sort of title and subtitle in Portuguese if you can. Because your title is quite tricky. Hive Mind. What would be Hive in Portuguese?
You're really testing me now. I don't know. I'm a bit rusty. I need to go back
okay,
to Brazil
okay,
for a
Siobhan.
month and sort of hone up on my Portuguese speaking. It's just, I wouldn't know what hive is in Portuguese.
I
Sorry.
know that's a tricky one. When I asked, I was thinking, we may have to Google translate that one.
We may,
Anyway.
We may.
Well, congratulations on this wonderful body of work. I feel after I left this work, you know, I've recommended it already to a lot of the corporate clients that I work with. I really feel strongly, and I'm excited to be able to share this conversation. Before we get into the raw nuts and bolts of the conversation, I have a fun feature called Inside Your Mind, where I ask you seven either or type of questions. For the audience to get to know you. Can we do that?
Sure. Yeah, let's try it.
let me peel back your forehead and go inside your mind. Number one, tablet or laptop?
Laptop.
Movie or series?
Oh, series.
Ah, lovely. Physical book or ebook?
Physical book. There's nothing like being able to highlight and have dog colors on that book and go back to your favorite spots.
Lovely. All right. Swimming or cycling?
Swimming.
You're making this super, super easy. By train or by boat?
That's tricky. Both have their advantages, but I do love a train journey even more so than a boat because I do get a little bit seasick. My brother had his 60th birthday on a boat recently, and it was a fishing expedition around the bay in Melbourne, and I was a little bit sick. So
oh, wow.
I'd have to say the train.
Okay. Tokyo or Kyoto?
I've been to Tokyo. I haven't been to Kyoto, so I will say Tokyo.
Lovely. And number seven, tea with honey or without honey?
Oh, wow. Well, I've written The Hive Mind at work, and I love the bees, so it's got to be with honey.
That was designed for the perfect segue into this work. Thank you so much for allowing us to go inside your mind. Siobhan, when were you first attracted to bees?
As an eight-year-old growing up in the village of Fenay in Ireland, I was fascinated by the bees as they swarmed in the orchard of my family's farm. And that fascination with natural ecosystems, because it was beehives, but I was also fascinated by this, you know, the shoals of minnows, little fish in the River Inny, and the murmurations of swallows as they headed for warmer climes during the winter. But this fascination with natural ecosystems then led me to a study of human ecosystems, which I've spent most of my career doing.
I'm amazed at how much our upbringings end up almost priming us later in our lives without realizing it. I also grew up on a farm, and I grew up on a farm in North Carolina on the East Coast in the United States. And, you know, I remember growing up and, you know, my first exposure to bees was with my father and I. We went into the roof of the house to kind of gut out the roof. And when I was reading your book and thinking about swarms are really, really, really powerful, right? There's something about the noise, the energy. They are extraordinary. And I can't wait to get to chapter 8 a little bit later in this conversation where we talk about swarms. But that connection and making that connection between bees and hives and this conversation in your book, when did that happen?
It's probably emerged over a number of years, but thinking about this notion of moving from IQ to EQ, you know, they're not just sufficient. It's not just about IQ and EQ anymore. It has to be about the collective, about group intelligence. And then really going back to my childhood and thinking about, well, what epitomizes that for me? And for me, the bees and their work and how they operate in the hive epitomizes this notion of group intelligence and working towards something meaningful and productive. So it was sort of often you find those gems in your childhood and they really resonate. Yeah. For me, it was that story of the bees that I always remembered as an eight-year-old child.
I wonder if we could measure the GQ or group intelligence, and congrats on this framing. It's really, really wonderful framing. I love the model, but I wonder if we were able to measure the group intelligence of ants versus bees. What do you think will come out on top?
Wow. Well, that's such a fascinating concept, because when I was researching this book, I was also researching not just bees, but ants, and they in the Amazon jungle a researcher called Kuzin studied the ants and how they travel across the undulating floor of the Brazilian Amazonian sort of jungle. And they make bridges with their bodies. So they connect
Yes,
together,
yeah.
all the ants, they make these bridges, and then the other ants cross those bridges. So this sense of cooperation, this sense of group intelligence extends to the bees as well as to the ants. And it's hard to say, really. I love
It's
them
a tough one,
all.
right? It yeah,
It's a
it's tough.
tough
It's
one. It's very
and
tough.
it's so inspiring when you know, I'm a huge fan of nature, and I don't know if you know about the concept called nature bathing, where spending like a certain amount of time in nature boosts your T cells and your immune system. And there's so much we can learn from nature, and that's why I'm really, really happy that this work is out there. And I think, you know, if people start with bees and they learn from ants and then they learn from birds and then they learn from that, so much we can gain from this. Well, what do you think is the fundamental difference between group intelligence and sort of the wisdom of the crowd?
Yeah, The Wisdom of the Crowd was a groundbreaking book. And I suppose what the wisdom of the crowd was saying is the more eyeballs and intelligence you can get on a subject, the better, which I fundamentally believe in. Group intelligence is that next step. I think what it is starting to explore is how do we as leaders develop the group intelligence to be able to firstly understand groups and secondly intervene in groups in order to help them to perform, to grow, and to adapt. So, one is yes, that hive has wisdom. The other is how can I understand its patterns and intervene in that group in order to nudge it in the right direction? So,
Got it.
it's a build.
Yeah, it makes complete sense. It's like, it's one thing to understand your emotions, but then how do you channel them? How do you move them forward? You know, when you're thinking about this next step of GQ, group intelligence, where do you see it being most applicable at the moment in the global workplace? Where's the problem? Let's put our finger on the pulse of the problem where we can apply this insight.
Yeah, so the problems in organizations are often very complex. So you're standing there as a manager or as an HR person or even as a consultant, and you're thinking, this is a bit like a spider's web. So on the, I look to my left, I've got a performance problem. I look to my right, I've got an employee engagement problem. I look up here, I've got a dip in a customer satisfaction. Another thread of the spider's web might be that we can't grow as an organization. Another thread might be we're seeing safety problems. So this complex web, where do you intervene? There are threads and threads and threads, and do you start pulling a thread and suddenly you're even more tangled? So what this starts to give you is the intelligence to understand it's not a complex web, it's not a mess, it's actually a perfectly co-created pattern. And that's what I start to uncover in my book, that the paradox in these complex ecosystems, whether it be climate systems or financial markets or companies or cultures or even families, the paradox is that simple patterns or rules underpin the complexity, if only we can see it.
I see. One of those rules would be, what would you say would be one of the more critical rules that underpin group intelligence?
So an example was one of these patterns of rules when I was working at an infrastructure company. So they were doing large scale infrastructure projects. And one of the GMs, she'd recently been promoted. So she was very keen to make her mark. But in a conversation with her, she said, "Siobhan, I'm not getting anywhere. I've been 6 months in the role and I'm still hearing complaints from customers." and I'm about to invest in a new fleet. I think customers are upset that the fleet's out of date, the equipment's out of date. We need to invest and update our equipment. So I said, well, hang on before you go out and spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on a new fleet. Let me take a look. So I went to several of the projects, the infrastructure projects that she was running, and on one of them in the Goldfields region of Victoria, when I spoke to the project manager, he said, well, we have delays. I said, well, what are the delays due to? He said, well, we're delayed because we don't have the equipment to get through the quartz rock in this region. Anyway, to cut a long story short, they should have known about the quartz rock in the region, but they hadn't anticipated it. And they were caught in what I call the reactive pattern. So they were reacting constantly. Then, when they didn't have the equipment, they were sending in the firefighters as the heroes. You go in and fix the problem, dig the trenches to lay the internet cable because we forgot to order the jumbo drills. And that reactive pattern was running the organization, not only on that contract where they're sending in the hero firefighters, it was happening right across the board, and in fact, right across the organization, because patterns are often fractals. They appear in one part, but they appear in multiple parts of the organization or the ecosystem. So that's just an example of where where patterns can emerge. And these patterns are, there are multitudes of them, but that's just one, the reactive pattern that you're nodding there, Timothy. Does that resonate?
It does. And I'm thinking about if a leader who is new to this subject reads your book, goes on this journey of trying to increase their GQ, how long of a process would you say this is?
This is a process that doesn't happen overnight because we have been wired for the technical. We've been wired for both the technical and the relationship. So we've been told that IQ, we fall back on IQ, but IQ just uses rationality and logic to fix technical problems. So we try and apply the IQ lens, it doesn't work. Then we try and apply the EQ lens. So we look at the relationships between people and the trust between people, and it's still very interpersonal, important, but not sufficient. So then you think, right, if I'm going to understand this complexity and these complex adaptive ecosystems, I need to develop GQ. That could take years to become fully proficient at it, but the good news is you can get better. But it doesn't happen overnight, is my experience, because you have to basically rewire your brain to see the parts and the wholes, not just the individual, subjective motivations.
I want to make this super clear for, I have a, whenever I do a podcast, I usually have leaders, executive professionals in mind. And I'm thinking of a woman who has 14 countries that it's in her portfolio. And she sits in a wonderful coastal city trying to manage teams in these different parts of the world. And the her desire to rally teams is at the top of her priorities. Give me a before and after snapshot of before she learns deep GQ and after she learns GQ. What would be the fundamentals of how the environment would shift in those teams?
Well, the first thing that GQ would give her is the ability to understand at a deeper level what's going on in her ecosystem. And to be able to diagnose what is happening is a crucial part of instigating whatever change she is seeking to instigate. And without that diagnosis, you're often pulling at the wrong threads in the spider web. You're just
I see.
willy-nilly pulling threads rather than, like the GM of the infrastructure company, she was going to invest in new equipment. But actually, what she needed to do was to rewire her whole department from reactive thinking to forward planning. So the pattern became we think and plan ahead. Now, she went on a journey to do that and it took some time, but within a year, she was seeing the benefits of that and customers were also seeing the benefits of that. So it's about firstly seeing the system and understanding what are the patterns that are running this system and how do I intervene if it needs intervention in order to make those more functional. And
Right.
that is what GQ would give her. Firstly, the ability to diagnose. So she's seeing, hearing noise, she's seeing issues, she's seeing a performance dip. What's going on in the ecosystem? And how do I intervene so I don't get resistance and pushback from the ecosystem, but my interventions go in seamlessly and take it in the right direction?
Lovely. Let's talk a little bit about your time at the ANZ Bank in New Zealand. Your work there and the case was written by our, I think, our Harvard professor, and it was taught at Harvard. What was the outstanding thing that happened inside of your work there that caused this to be a case study taught at Harvard?
Yeah, so at the ANZ Bank, what happened was a remarkable turnaround over 7 years that created, went from the worst performing bank in the country to the number one bank globally on the Dow Jones Sustainability Index. And essentially, what that was seeing what was going on in the ecosystem. When I walked in, managers or the executives were at a loss because they had tried so many things to bring about a change, including a massive restructure, but nothing worked. So we went about diagnosing what was going on. And what we discovered was what I call the order taker pattern. There were order takers in head office who were giving the instructions to the 700 bank branches, who were in the role of order taker. So order givers, order takers, head office,
Got
order givers, branches, order takers.
it.
And the agreement, because patterns are the agreements between the parts, the agreement between the parts was that head office gives the instructions to the branches. And that was creating a whole loss of energy, loss of motivation, and a sense of victim in the whole organization. And that was at the heart of the problem.
Siobhan, every so often in a podcast conversation, I have an explosive light bulb moment. And it's happened, and it hadn't happened in a while. And the light bulb moment I have is around the agreement inside of the patterns. The idea that there are these silent agreements that determine without us realizing it. It's extraordinary that you have agreed to your destruction. It's just incredible.
Yes,
Like,
incredible.
wow. Like, it's just one of
Yes.
those moments where I'm just like, and I feel like going off on a tangent on this, but I'm not, because I want people to read your book. Let's talk a little bit about nudging the hive forward, because, as a behavioral psychology practitioner, one of the biggest topics is nudging and being able to shift and move with small nudges. Let's talk about how to move a hive forward in small incremental ways.
Yeah. So let's take a practical example because your listeners want practicality. And let's go back to the ANZ Bank. So here we have these people in head office who are in the order taker role, and these people in the branches who are in the victim, let me just do what I'm told role. How do you nudge that forward? So what we did was we redesigned the bank's operating model and we reframed the role. So the head office people would be reframed from you don't give the orders anymore. You're actually the enablers, critical enablers, providing services like HR or IT or risk management to the branches. And the branches, you go from just taking the orders to the customer service providers. Now, this has nothing to do with your job description. This is reframing your mental map of your role individually and collectively. And that was the nudge. We redesigned the operating model, we reframed the roles, and then we took 34,000 people through workshops to help them to redraw their mental map of their role.
Wow, what a powerful nudge. And did you find that taking these 30 plus thousand people through this, were there moments that you found that there was critical buy-in? So, with that level of an audience, what did you learn about those moments of buy-in?
So one of the things I talk about in the hive mind at work is that leaders with GQ understand the nine laws of group dynamics. And one of those nine laws is the tipping point, the law of the tipping point. And leaders with GQ know how to reach these critical junctures faster and with less noise. And John McFarlane, the CEO of the bank at the time, was a master at this. And he had agreed with the other CEOs of the other big banks that we will not close down any more rural branches because the people in our rural communities depend on them. One of the big banks broke ranks. And it announced that it would sell 53 rural branches. The very next day, John McFarland announced to the marketplace, we will buy those branches. And the people in the bank, that deal never eventuated, but it didn't matter because the people who were employed in the bank saw that and thought, this is a change I can believe in. This is a CEO I can trust. This is a man who is holding to his word, and I will get off the fence and get on board. So we reached a tipping point, not even realizing that it would be a tipping point because he was just so annoyed that this big bank broke ranks. But we reached that tipping point and we went almost overnight to this swarm of people coming on board with the change.
Lovely. When you think about making this change stick, which one of the laws are critical to ensuring that the change actually sticks?
I would say one of the laws is the law of embeddedness. The law of embeddedness is about how change becomes deeply embedded in complex systems. And often you have to undo that, but during change, you have to create the infrastructure to embed the change deeply. So how do you do that? You do the change, but you might have to put in systems and processes and policies and scaffolding for that change to take hold. And the example I give from the bees world is when the bees make they swarm and they go and find a new home because the hive has become overcrowded. And when they get to that new location, let's say it's the hollow of a tree at the edge of a forest, what do? They don't just take it easy and rest. They start building the infrastructure. They start building all of their little hexagonal cells to store the pollen in so that they can gather enough and keep enough for the hibernation in winter. So the infrastructure for change is incredibly important in order to get it deeply embedded within the ecosystem.
Is it possible if you have someone who is not buying in? And the swarm is powerful and it is moving with force. Is it possible for that person to get stung by the bees?
Well, that's a great question. Actually, it's quite interesting in the hive because the hive, as the food gets scarce, what happens in the hive is that the worker bees kick the drones out, which is really quite cruel. But in the hive, there is no place for people who don't perform and who will not be accountable for their work. So the drones are just sitting around, not really doing much, whereas the worker bees are really, Each worker bee flies the equivalent of 1.5 times around the world for 1 teaspoonful of honey in its
Wow.
lifetime. So these
Wow.
worker bees,
Incredible.
they are incredible. But they decide as winter is approaching and resources are scarce, and these drones are sitting around not doing a lot, because their role is just to fertilize the eggs, that they will kick the drones out of the hive. Now that's very severe, but it is a very accountable culture, the hive.
And the group intelligence often, I can imagine, understand what needs to happen for it to continue to thrive, right? And I think all ecosystems work that way. And I think ideologies are arising to ignore fundamental laws. And I think it's dangerous to under to ignore. I mean, as much as I'd like for gravity to be a social construct. It's not. It's a reality. And every day I'm in gym, I'm having to remind myself of this law of nature. And I hope people take away from this book that these laws of what happens inside of groups is just another skill and a powerful skill you can learn. It's a science, it's a discipline. And I'm really, really grateful you brought this work to us. I want to find out quickly as we move to wrap up. Is there an organization, a dream organization you'd like to apply this work with?
Well, I'm already applying it because I am the head of HR, the CHRO at Dulux Group, and I've been there for 8 years
Ah,
applying these
lovely.
principles. So I'm what
Lovely.
you call an insider. So when I was
Nice, nice.
looking around at all the books that were being written on this topic of change, I thought a lot of the books were being written by academics and consultants, and this is a fantastic lens, don't get me wrong, a brilliant lens. But what was missing for me was an insider lens. Those people like myself in charge of change, doing the work every day. So I've spent the last 8 years at Dulux Group and prior to that at Broad Spectrum and prior to that at ANZ, really, honing the tools that create change in a practical way rather than just an academic ivory tower study. This is day in,
Yeah.
day out testing these tools to see do they work or not.
Maybe that's why this book landed so well with me, is that I sort of straddle these two. I do a lot of lecturing with business schools, but also work within inside of corporation as a consultant. And I found that you straddle that really, really well. The rigor of the academic side as well as the practical. And Siobhan, thank you so much again, and I appreciate you joining us on the Brain and Brand Show.
Thank you so much for the excellent conversation. I really enjoyed it.